Get ready to whiten those knuckles and hold fast as we talk the most daring, dangerous, and epic sea stories ever told.
Whether facing ruthless men who prey on other mariners, or storms that turn calm seas into graveyards, those who go down to the sea and cast off lines enter the most challenging and dangerous environment on Earth.
Only here will you hear their stories and the lessons learned through their experience. I'm Phil, here with Brian, your host, and we welcome you aboard They Had to Go Out podcast. Before we dive into this episode, we need to provide a disclaimer. The views expressed on this podcast are those of the individuals involved and are not to be construed as official or reflecting the views of any government agency or military service. This podcast is an independent effort with no government association.
Hey guys, welcome back to episode 5 of They Had to Go Out. Really hope you've enjoyed listening as much as we've enjoyed making it. I tell you, Phil, getting to meet and listen to these shipmates, you know, I think it's incredible.
I know some really cool guys, don't I?
Yeah, you do know some pretty awesome guys out there.
Hey, for all of our new listeners, we really appreciate you guys tuning in. For the repeat guys, thank you so much for kind of making it a habit. We appreciate it that you've subscribed and that you've reviewed us on there. Just keep it up, and please share the word.
Yes, we hope you're enjoying, like I said, the podcast, and I just think that they have so much meaning than just good sea stories, you know. I think there's a lesson to be learned in all the stories that, you know, these heroes of ours that we know, they tell.
For sure, and I think it's funny. I've had a couple guys who were like, "Oh, I've got 20 years as a chief bosun mate. I don't know if I have any stories." So I'm like, "Wait, you got 20 years as a chief bosun mate? You know, I guarantee you got some stories." I think everybody's got a story, and if you have a story to share, just go ahead and reach out to us. They had to go out. At gmail.com. You can social media messages, however you want.
Facebook.
Yep. Whatever you got, we're probably on it. So just look us up and feel free to reach out. We'd love to have you on.
Yeah. So let's get going with this. Tell me, how stoked are you about our next guest?
So well, I know this guy personally, yeah. Right? Like, as all of them so far, but I just saw him a couple months ago at a change of command. He flew out from Texas to say congratulations to a friend. He's already retired, you know, but he's still one of us. He's still part of it, and really good to see him there. But that said, he is another one of those guys that you just want on the crew when it you know, when stuff's going down and you need a you need that person you can rely on. This is one of them.
Yeah, when the stuff hits the fan, you know, he's the guy you want there with you.
Absolutely, and he's you know, there's certain guys that are just like born leaders, and you can just tell, like, the, you know, the guys that people gravitate to, and this is one of them. His name's Bobby Downs, retired bosun, and joined the I'll give you a quick bio. Joined the Coast Guard back in 1996. First unit was Chetco River, and he followed my career path there and went from seaman to first class in one tour, which was a thing that used to happen all the time.
That's that leadership thing.
That's what it was. Sure. Yeah, that's what it was. It could have just been service need, but we'll go with whatever.
I like to call it leadership.
He goes from Station Chetco River to the PAC Area Training Team, which back in the day, for anybody that's new and is in now, our training teams used to be incredibly cool, right? Way cooler than they are now. They used to set boats on fire, sink boats, and if the boat sank in the boat basin, it wasn't a big deal. This was one of those guys. He was there.
We call that the real guard.
The real guard. He was there post 9/11, helped stand up the boat tactics section of that whole training team, and helped get a lot of crews online to be able to protect the critical infrastructure and the major boats and the population centers wherever they were at. So huge mission there. His next unit's where I met him, Station Golden Gate out in San Francisco, where he is certified as a surfman. He's a BM1 there. We have some epic stories from there. The one he's going to tell today is not from there, but maybe one day. Went from Golden Gate someone took extreme pity on him and gave him a critical fill at a station in Honolulu, Hawaii as the executive petty officer.
That's got to be a tough tour right there.
Yeah, very tough tour. So tough that they made him OIC.
Oh.
Because nobody else wanted it, I'm sure. They just fleed it up from inside. But then, as with all good things, they come to an end, and eventually karma gets back to you. And he went as the BMC officer in charge of Station Sheboygan, Wisconsin.
Sheboygan. Do they even have a station out there?
I have zero idea, but I guarantee you it's cold. I know, like, the general region of the country it's in,
yeah.
and it's all white or purple even right now.
That's
so
crazy, man.
Yep, he went there, but must have succeeded again and made Bosun. Left from Wisconsin, went to Freeport, Texas, where he was the commanding officer of that station there. And eventually retired out of the service after 20 years.
Wow.
But long, entirely operational career, solid human beings.
A lot of range too, huh?
Yep, for sure. And with that said, we've got him on right now, Brian.
All right. Well, Bosun, thank you so much for doing this for us. Like I said, I can't thank you enough. I know you have a lot of stories and leadership just in those stories that our listeners can use in everyday life. It doesn't matter if they're soldiers, sailors, or everyday people. People go through challenges, and we feel that you're just a person to help them, you know, push through those challenges with a story. So,
I mean, you did a transfer from Hawaii to Wisconsin. Yeah. That right there is like, you know, that's just fortitude. you stayed in
after that.
Well, I appreciate it, guys. And that transfer from that you're talking about from Hawaii to Wisconsin, I had to go back to my map and try to figure out where Wisconsin Lake Michigan was.
What lake is that?
Well, it's Lake Michigan.
Okay, all right.
Okay. And, you know, doing that kind of deal, man, I went from board shorts and sandals for 4 years to figuring out how to buy boots and big jackets and beanies and everything else.
Yeah, sunshine.
Different type of board they use up there, though, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah. The only thing cool about that place is, I'll tell you, just a little known fact, is Sheboygan, Wisconsin is the number one spot in freshwater surfing in America.
Oh, no wow. joke.
I had no idea.
Yeah. Wow. So I got to fit in pretty good right away. But then come October, November, I put the boards away.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I don't even think a 5mm wetsuit is going to help you right now, right? I mean, you got to be,
oh,
gotta,
no.
Yeah, no way.
Well, it's all ice.
No.
Yeah. True. Good point.
Yeah. But I appreciate the introduction, guys. It's awesome.
All right.
Appreciate what you guys are doing, reaching out to the shipmates and doing all that. I mean, that's a good little deal that you guys got going. So hopefully it keeps going. And you guys thrive off of this. It's awesome.
Well, we hope that we can keep it going as long as possible. And so I just want to ask you, because I like doing this, Bosun, can you give us your most dangerous, daring, or epic story that you can think of?
When the question comes up like that, you kind of, I mean, you feel all different realms and areas and stuff, what you want to do. But I do have one story, and it was back in my first unit. Chucko, I just made BM1, and this was back in the time you were either a surfman or you're a coxswain. We didn't do the heavy weather back in the time.
Okay.
You know, back in the guard back then, right?
Back in the real guard.
Yeah. So, you know, you had weather conditions, and Chucko River has a 85-foot bar. You know, it's crossing from jetty to jetty. So, and our surfmen at the time were, well, if it's breaking, I'll go out with you. But if it's not breaking, you're going to do it yourself. And, you know, you're talking 30, 35 mile an hour winds,
wow.
You know, 16, 18 foot seas. You know, if it wasn't breaking across their bar, they figured you can go out and do it yourself just as a coxswain. You know, and
sounds familiar. Sounds familiar, Bob.
What's that?
Sounds familiar.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, I seem to remember, like, Station Goldgate. Oh, I'm not sure about this. Oh, you got it. Is it breaking? No. We don't even have a bar.
Know,
just go out.
Same thing. But,
yeah.
You know, at least Goldgate, you had a mile and a half entrance.
Yeah, very true.
You know,
a little different than 85 feet.
You know, but, so it was one of those days, man, where our bar wasn't breaking. We had good swell coming through, you know, big ground swell. You know, you're looking at probably 14, 16, occasionally 18 ground foot swell. You know, coming out of the northwest. So it was pretty good rolling day for Chucko River, kind of faced that. And we got a call of the bluefin, fishing vessel bluefin, that was broken down, probably about 48-foot boat that I can remember. You know, this is back in 98, 99, actually right about 2000. when this was.
And this would be like an old crab boat, right? Like more than likely, yeah. Wooden crab boat.
Yeah, just the old nasty crab boat, you know, wood crab boat, you know, about 46 foot, 45 foot, something like that. You know, the double enders.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, and it's crab season, of course, you know, and they call in and they're broken down. And of course, you know, so we kind of, you know, we get the crew together. And this is right when GAR and all that, you know, was starting to get into play. And we started looking at, you know, doing that kind of stuff and make sure you're briefing before you go out. I was a senior guy on duty as a BM1, you know, so I took the crew out and go get this guy.
So,
you know,
you were mentioning GAR and it was just starting up. For our listeners, GAR is a green, amber, red scenario where you as a coxswain will discuss with your crew. You'll set a certain number of points to it. Depending on your total score, it would be a risk assessment for your crew to go out. Am I correct?
Yeah, you nailed that, Brian.
All right.
Kind of like a go-no-go situation.
Yeah, you know, you can even be in the red and still go. You know, it's just a matter of knowing what you're red in and trying to break down the areas. You know, it could be weather, it could be your highest thing, it could be the boat, it could be your personnel. You know, how do you manage those kind of people through that, you know?
Yeah.
If you have real a couple guard. Of young guys that only been there for a year or two, you know, or only been through one heavy weather season, you know, you might want to put some more senior people on with you.
And so how long have you been there at this point?
I've been there about 4.5 years at this point.
So you know, I mean, a 16-foot swell, a 47, I'm guessing you're on the 47 when you went out for sure, right?
Right.
So, yeah. I mean, a 16-foot swell is above your height of eye on the open bridge.
Yes.
So, you know, after 4 years, you're comfortable in going and facing a wall of water that's higher than you.
Right. Yeah, you get kind of used to it after a while.
Right.
Yeah, so, you know, and I picked a pretty good crew. I had a BM2 that was a coxswain also, and he was on the, you know, he'd been there for a couple of years and seasoned. And I had a real seasoned engineer. You know, a guy could fix anything underway. He could fix, you know, just, so I felt pretty confident about the crew we had. And what was going on is the boat had just, you know, lost its engine power.
Yeah,
so we set up and go out to get this guy. You know, kind of, I can remember, it's not raining or nothing. It's just a big swell day, a little wind blowing, probably 25 knots, 30 knots at the best.
A lot of wind chop at the top of the swells, I take it?
Yeah, you know, you're getting bounced around pretty good. But yeah. A big ground swell, it hadn't really shortened up yet. So we still had a pretty good ground swell because we had some storms roll through the prior day or two, you know, before.
Yeah.
So the leftover from that was, you know, actually a really nice swell. But it was starting to stand up a little bit. And, of course, they were probably, I want to say if I remember right, they were probably about 9-10 miles offshore, you know, up north offshore where we had to go get them.
Wow.
So, you know, it takes us a little bit to get up there in that kind of weather conditions and everything else like that. And, you know, as you get up there, of course, the wind starts picking up and everything starts shortening up. It's getting choppier.
The sky's darkened. The lightning strikes.
That's Murphy's Law right there. It never fails. The minute you can start going out.
Yeah, you know, you start heading out, you know, 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. All of a sudden, by the time you get there, it's winter time, so it's dark by 6.
Yeah.
You know, and so, but I can remember, man, we got up there, we get up to this case, and we're, you know, we do the circle of the boat, you know, because I'm really trying to show the crew, you know, make sure we're paying attention to what's going on, because they got engine failure, so, you know, we kind of just go around through it. So we realize, the BM2 that's with me, he's never been in conditions like we were in. And we had to pass a drogue. You know, you want to pass a sea anchor just in case.
Right.
You don't know how the guy's going to ride in case you need to slow him down or, you know, pull him from one side or the other. So so we passed a couple of things. We, you know, my BM2, you know, he makes a couple approaches. You know, if you kind of picture, he's facing down swell, you know, and he can't steer very well.
Right.
So he's kind of running down swell. We're trying to pass, you know, a pump and a sea drogue. 16 to 18, you know, 16 foot seas, occasional 18 with a little wind blowing. So it gets a little hairy, you know, starts getting the pucker factor starts coming a little bit because, you know, the BM2 is not sure what he's doing. I'm standing over the top of him, kind of guiding him, you know, and he's getting pretty close and, you know, we have to do a couple approaches in or out. So, you know, he's just kind of setting the scene of the whole, how this whole day is going to start going. So as we get that, we get the pump across, get the drug across. It takes about 4 or 5 attempts, you know, for us to get all that across. And then we do the bridle hookup. we want to do a bridle hookup. So we run down swell with them. We're actually pacing this guy on a 16-foot swell day.
Wait. A U.S. Coast Guard surfman didn't make a heavy weather approach, and you were going down swell with him?
I wasn't a surfman at that time.
Oh, man. Look, I mean, that right there was news to everyone. I think people just, like, somebody is up in arms right now. You're gonna get beat up outside a bar or something.
There's more than one way.
I can't believe I had somebody admit that on air.
Yeah, man, I was just telling you what we did, man.
Yeah,
mind
blown.
Well, this guy, you know, he's going down swell, man. He's running down. If I do a heavy weather approach, he's gonna T-bone into me. The best thing I saw, man, was just parallel this guy and run with him.
No, hey, I'm not a surfman, and I'm like, I ascribe to that policy, right? Like, whatever makes it easiest and safest, do it. But, there's I know there's no option for some people. It is heavy weather or bust.
Yeah. There's no standard out there, so you do what you had to do.
Yeah.
You
want to keep your letter? You will heavy weather
guys,
approach.
Phil. I hear what you're saying. I've been with those guys.
That was good.
But, yeah, man, so we hooked up. Just parallel the guy. Got the stuff over. It's getting dark by this time. Obviously, the wind's still blowing. You know, it's actually blowing us in towards land because we're about 7-8 miles offshore. By the time we hooked up, we'd moved in about 1.5-2 miles closer to shore. So, and you know, when you get closer to shore, things start standing up a little bit more.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just the contour of the ground and stuff, that big groundswell that we're enjoying all of a sudden starting to stand up a little bit.
Right.
You know, and so once we get hooked up, we start going. And here's a typical thing, man. This is where the story starts getting weird. Is as we're, you know, we pay this guy out like 550 feet, you know, because we're trying to get in between, trying to get in step. You know, and step is where, you know, we're both in the trough, we're both on the face, we're both on the back of the waves.
Right.
You know, we're trying to get this guy in step. And, well, doing that with this guy fully loaded, we're making about 4 knots.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Right? So we know we got 7.5 miles to go, we're making 4 knots. And all of a sudden, you know, he's starting to veer, you know, to the right, you know, so we're like, man, so, you know, we're asking him to fix the steering, you know, lock the steering in, you know, and he says he can't do it. So, and this is within the first 1,000 yards of starting to tow this guy. Well, we tell him to put the drogue out, you know, and you, over all the training you guys have ever done, you explain to the fisherman how to pull it out of the bag, how to put the line on the cleat, pay the bag out slowly, you know, and so...
Yeah, for anybody that doesn't know, it's just it's just basically a giant parachute just to create drag on one side of the boat or the other, or just slow it down entirely, right?
Correct.
Right. And so so we tell him to put it out, wait a little bit, nothing's going on, you know, and so we call him back like 5-10 minutes later, like, hey, did you happen to get that drug out? He goes, yeah, but it's floating way behind us now. the guy had thrown the whole bag in the water.
Wow. Yes.
So you're like, man, this is not good. You know, so now we're just going to deal with trying to drag him sideways, you know, as we're still going up and down these waves and rolling through. And then he comes on the radio and he goes, hey, how fast are you guys going to tow us? And we're like, well, we're going to make 4 knots at best, you know, the sea conditions, wind conditions, we're going to make 4 knots at the best, you know. And he goes, well, that's going to take us a couple hours to get home. We're like, yeah, you know, we're 8 miles out. It's going to take us a while to get there, you know. And so we kind of sat there and about 5 minutes later, all of a sudden we turn around. And this guy starts surfing down these waves, you know, so he's creating a bunch of slack between us and him.
Yeah.
You know, and all of a sudden, man, and mind you, I still have my BM2 on the wheel, right? Because I was like, well, we're hooked up now. You can drive. Just pull this guy. So I have my BM2 on the wheel, and all of a sudden this guy just surfs down a 16-foot wave and then gets in the trough and kind of veers to the right real hard, right?
Yeah.
So I'm screaming at my BM2 now. I'm like, throttle, throttle, throttle. You know, we're trying to increase throttle and pull to the left to get him to come straight. Otherwise, he's going to go sideways up this 16-foot wave.
Right.
You know, and if it starts cresting or anything, you know, and he's fully loaded with crab pots, you know, 6 high on the back end.
Yeah, wow. He could definitely capsize that thing.
Yeah, easy. You know. Yeah, so, easy. And so we're at that point now. My crew's freaking out. I look at my MK3. He's down below. He's got a knife standing right by the tow pit. You know, he's ready to cut this guy loose.
Man, if this guy doesn't make a decision, I will.
Yeah. You know, he's telling me, I mean, he's showing his actions right there. Hey, let's cut this guy free. We're done. You know, and I'm like, no, hold on. You know, so.
Problem solved.
With my BM2, he's up on the helm side of the console up there on the 47. You know, I'm like, hard left, throttle, throttle, pull this guy. You know, so we start pulling him. and we get him right up behind us. Well, here comes the next wave. Well, he surfs down the next wave. Now he goes to the left. You know, so now he's veering left. You know, and so now I have my BM2 just right, left. And, you know, I start getting on the radio. I'm like calling the bluefin out. You know, nobody's answering.
Of course not.
You know, and this guy, now all of a sudden we've doubled our speed. Now we're making 8.5 knots.
Holy.
You know, yeah, holy crap is what I'm thinking, right?
Yeah, right.
So I'm on this, and I'm screaming on the radio, you know, seeing what we can do. My MK3 standing by the tow bit. He's ready to cut it. My other non-rate that's sitting up in the chairs, he doesn't know what's going on. You know, he's trying not to get sick. You know, and me and my BF2 are up top trying to figure out how to drive this whole situation, man. And so we're sitting there. I mean, and we're every wave now, every wave, we're making 8.5, 9 knots pulling this guy. You know, he can't even do that speed, right? You know, normally that's their max speed, 7, 8 knots as it is. And we're doing 8 knots, and this guy's coming down 16-foot waves, going right. You know, we'd straighten him up, and then he'd come down the next one going left. I mean, it was just, and going, like, almost pitching all the way over. Just side rails are hitting the water. You know, we're just sitting there, like, screaming on the radio. I got my MK3, went down and grabbed, you know, the 127s. I'm like, man, shoot this thing right at that guy's bridge.
You know? So I got to get his attention.
The time. I mean, we're lighting flares. I mean, I'm sitting at 127, 600 feet behind us, trying to bounce him off this guy's, you know, boat.
Yeah, you know, in the dark.
You know, and so my BM2 sarcastically looks at me and goes, hey, can we change car real quick? I was like, yeah, go ahead, because we're red. I said, yeah, but nothing we can do, man. We got to get out of this.
Yeah, right. That's a very good point.
You know, and so I can remember, man, I was calling, but at the time it was Group North Bend, you know, because up north of us, you know, I don't, you know, instead of sectors or whatever, we were still groups. And I can remember getting on the radio with Group North Bend on Channel 16, saying, get a helo hot because I'm going to have dead people here soon.
Right, yeah.
You know, and they're like, what? I'm like, get a helo going because I'm going to have a capsized boat with people stuck inside. You know, and I'm trying.
We've got a lot more of this episode to go, and we'll get right back to it after this short ad from our sponsor.
Trying to call a station for a backup boat, you know, but I'm still 7, 8 miles away.
Yeah.
You know, so, and I ain't kidding you, man. We went for 4 miles of this guy surfing down a wave and us throttle jockeying and pulling this thing back and forth without him capsizing.
Did he engage his engine, or did it just stand up that much once you guys got closer to shore?
So, yeah, I'll get to that here.
Okay, yeah. I knew there was something else going on. I was like, man, I kind of assumed. I got you.
Yeah, so you know, so this guy, so finally, you know, and we're on the radio, and my BM2, I'm still letting my BM2 drive through this out, man. You know, we're just sitting over the top of it, you know, because switching out drivers really ain't that point at that time, right? You know,
right.
I mean, all we're doing is going right and left, pulling this guy straight. I get a hold of my station, my XPO at the time, who was a surfman. You know, he calls me up. He gets on the radio, and he's like, what's going on, Bob? And I'm, you know, and you can hear it in the voice at the point in time, you know, because he just is chaos.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You're going to an hour and a half of chaos, and just adrenaline's gone through the roof. You know, you got, and by this time, my non-rate's throwing up on the side, holding on to the thing. My MK3, he's, you know, he just wants to cut the guy loose. My BM2 is just screaming, like, what do I do? You know, and so we're just walking through this whole thing. So then my XPO, he finally shows up, you know, he gets to the second boat crew, and we're about a mile and a half from the entrance buoy at this time. Well, all of a sudden, you know, and the whole time we're screaming at this guy on the radio. You know, all of a sudden, as the second boat comes out, all of a sudden this guy lines up right behind us, perfectly in step.
Of course.
Right, and gets on the radio and goes, hey, were you guys trying to call us?
Are you there?
Like, oh, here we go.
Wait till right? I get you dockside, bro.
Yeah, right. So, and I was like, yeah, I said, you know, we've been screaming at you for the last hour and a half. He goes, oh, we must have kicked the engines in gear. I was like, you got to be kidding me.
Man.
You know? So the whole, you know, because he didn't want to take 4 knots to get back. So the guy ends up kicking this thing in gear. And I can't describe to you enough about how many times this guy was on the slide. You know, luckily his pots didn't fall off, you know, everything else like that. So, of course, you know, my BM1, the XPO, when he shows up, he gets on the radio. He's like, I don't see a problem. I'm like, yeah. He goes, well, get to the entrance buoy and drop tow, and I'll take this guy inside for you. You guys go on a rest. I was like, no.
Yeah,
no,
there we go. There That's go. What I was hoping. I
no,
was hoping.
No, no,
yeah.
no.
I knew Bobby Downs wouldn't let that go.
I was like, no, I'm not disconnected from this guy, man. Yeah. Me and this guy are going to, you know, we're going to have a little conversation.
Right.
And then, you know, of course, you know, my XPO, he's like, well, He goes, we'll do the boarding. I said, I don't care what you do, as long as you wait till I get him on my hip, you know. And so we dragged this guy in, you know, and it was one of those typical things, man. But it was one of those situations, man, that you can't describe to anybody or prepare for, you know. And the whole situation like that. So we dragged this guy in, and he ended up, him and his buddies were actually, you know, drinking on board. So, you know, alcohol on a commercial boat, you know. So we got him for,
that's a no-no.
You know, what a little justification there for my part.
A little payback. Yeah, a little karma in that one.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but, you know, the whole thing about that story is when we got done, you know, we all sat, you know, we did the debrief and everything else like that. And I can remember going through and talking about it. And that VM2, about 30 minutes later, brings me the old boat crew seamanship manual to me. Uh-huh. Right? He puts it on the desk and he goes, Boats, he goes, where's that toe in this book? I was like, man, I can't tell you where that toe is in this book. I said, he's like, how'd you know what to do? I go, man, you just got to react on how to keep these guys up above water, you know?
Yeah, for
and
sure.
So, but yeah, so that's just one of those little stories, you know, that you can't plan for. I mean, Coast Guard has a lot of things in place, you know, the GAR and all that stuff to kind of put you through mind thought of what you're dealing with and how to deal. But man, those are situations like that. You just got to kind of, you know, deal with as you go from the moment when you get there.
Right. Bobby, imagine now how much valuable training that BM2 got in that one day being with you out there on that one case.
Yeah, so I mean, it's amazing, you know, when you start thinking about stuff like that from, you know, and you guys, you know, talked about it, the leadership thing, man. I'm a pretty big fan of leadership stuff, and, you know, I've done my OIC tours, I've done my XO tours, but I tell you, man, there's nothing better than being on a boat with a crew, and you get to show them stuff, and you get to be with them, and you get to learn yourself, you know. You're always learning out there, and just to be able to share that and pass it to guys is awesome.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that drew me to the Coast Guard, that I mean, in order to train, you had to be, you know, really doing a, you know, performing a mission, because I've always thought it was so easy to tow another Coast Guard boat, you know, Phil, like,
oh, yeah.
Because everything is the exact same way. But when you hook up a fishing boat or you hook up a sailboat or something like that, the training that you get when you're doing that, you know, especially for someone like yourself who'd been doing it for 4.5 years, and then you have this young BM2 who's been there a couple years, probably never seen anything like this, you know. And he just soaked all that information up. And stuff like that, man, it gets passed on down from coxswain to coxswain. Even the fact that you would not let anyone come take your tow from you, you know, I think that's brilliant. And the same thing happened to me on a case. I was like 18 hours towing a 72-foot stern trawler in off of the Stellwagen Bank in New England, and I got maybe a mile from the sea buoy, and then here comes another 47 saying, you know,
you're fatigued.
You're fatigued.
Yeah, you're fatigued. Really. You know? They don't want you to finish it. You're like, man,
I'm like, you want to get punched? You want to get punched?
There's no way you're gonna take this tow from me unless you go back and get Mr. Guthline and have him come all the way out here and tell me, you know, get off the helm. So it's the coxswain in you.
Yeah, you know, and it's the whole thing of wanting to finish the job, too, you know. I mean, that's just the one thing is when you do stuff like that, man, you want to finish it all the way out, because then it just feels like you only did half your job. And especially, you know, we all know, man, putting bigger boats on the hip, you know, when you're putting, you know, those 60, 80, 100-foot boats on the hip, man, that's when it's fun no matter how long you've been out, you know.
For sure. That's when you show your skills.
We did RFO one time at Golden Gate, and I remember, like, the bosun's on board, and we were going to tow another 47, and a fishing boat broke down and went out there, and that was my, like, RFO stand drill.
You diverted?
And I moored it to the dock, and I don't remember what rate she was. You know, she wasn't a bosun. She was just a warrant, and it was like, you know, once it was done, it was like, okay, well, you passed. You know what I mean? Yeah, I mean, that's a skill in itself for sure. I mean, that's huge, trying to get those guys in.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, Bob, and I, you know, like to kind of set that scene too. I know exactly what you're talking about when these big fishing boats are surfing down that wave right behind you, and they're uncontrolled and they're like veering left and right. I mean, they're pushing a ton of water. All of a sudden they go from no speed to like high speed, and it looks like they're just going to either fly right past you, right, or like jam right into the stern of your own boat.
Right.
It's a dodgy feeling. Like, it's not, it is definitely something you want to correct, and right. It immediately looks wrong.
Especially at night. So did the crabber have any, was his lights, his nav lights on?
He just had red and greens on, you know.
Okay.
Yeah. That's all it.
So I mean,
it wasn't nothing. He didn't have the halogens on, you know. And he didn't. Thank goodness, because that would have been miserable for us. But
yeah.
You know, at least he didn't have his halogens on.
Hey, pop quiz: masthead lights for a fishing vessel.
I don't know. They're white, aren't they?
I was just asking. Just seeing what you remember. I know you're in a different industry now. Just thought we'd try. Ain't wrong, but we'll just keep going.
I think they're white somewhere around there. I don't know.
It works. It's good enough. Yeah. They're white, green, red, or yellow.
That's how most of them look when you go out to grab them anyway.
Yeah. They look like a giant halogen light in front of you. That's all I see.
Yeah. Well, one thing about fishermen, they are crazy bastards, I'll tell you that, you know?
Yeah.
These guys are out there making a living doing this, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's their livelihood, you know?
Yeah. I'd like to have a few of them on.
Oh, man.
I don't know if they can clean the language up enough.
Yeah, mature rating this thing. Yeah, one of your best lines I like from that story, Bob, was when, you know, they wanted to reassess the gar, and you were like, well, I mean, yeah, we can talk about it, but it's not going to do anything. I think... But, you know, at the same time, right?
You go reassess the car. I'm going to continue here to do my job.
But you know, you kind of shut him down, but you didn't, right? Because at the same time, you're on the radio. You're trying to increase the number of assets on scene, the experience on
He's
scene.
Constantly,
like,
he constantly reassessed it. During the whole, the whole mission, you know, from the time you started telling the story, I could see and visualize how constantly you were – constantly reassessing the situation, the gar, you know. Hell, you had someone ready to cut the line.
The whole thing, you're just checking. I mean, it's like step by step from the time I get out there to delivering the pumps to the drug to everything. You know, right. It's just madhouse.
Yeah, I think it's a good lesson. Like, hey, you can't – reassessing gar doesn't fix it, right? Like,
no.
It'll make us all more aware, but it doesn't fix it.
Yeah, I don't think we're trying to fix it at that point in time. I think we're just trying to say, hey, everybody knows. Hey, we're in red in case you didn't know.
Yeah. In case you didn't look to your right or left. Hey, Bob, we talked before you came on that you might be able to kind of broach the LE topic for us.
Well, you did do the post-star boarding.
Yeah, you did.
You did.
You got a fishing
up.
Boat BUI, I guess.
Yeah, right? At least I got that one.
But, you know, part of our thing was...
I'm going to start this off saying I'm not a big fan of LE.
No.
Just so you know.
No.
So, you know, as a young lad, I'll give you two stories if you don't mind.
Yeah.
One real quick. As a young lad, I went through as a BTM doing all this training, you know, going to school and doing all that stuff and getting hyped up about law enforcement. You know, I had a couple guys in my unit that were big time law enforcement guys, kind of like you, Phil, you know, lived and dreamed it. And wasn't something that
Does
I did.
Does he know you?
Top tier.
Yeah. But so I can tell you the first case or first boarding I ever went on up in Oregon as a BTM. First time I put on a gun belt officially, you know, as a BTM. It's a domestic violence case on a fishing boat. So we get the call. We're helping Oregon State Police, you know, looking for this guy. It's a... you know, and he's on this 85-foot boat sitting at the dock. So it's three or four of us, you know, Oregon State Police guys and three of us. And we're on the boat, and we're knocking on the hull, screaming for the guy to come out. You know, no movement, no nothing like that. And then, you know, and so they tell me to get on the back end of the boat, you know, stand up and look at the door coming where the guy would be able to walk out, right? And all of a sudden, you know, we're screaming. We've been there for like 15 minutes screaming for this guy to come out. He's not coming out. And he's supposed to be armed, you know. So he's got, you know, they're like, oh, he's got a Colt 45 with him. He doesn't like law enforcement. So you guys need to be prepared. Now, this is the first time I've ever dressed up as a, you know, law enforcement guy. I'm not going to lie to you. I was a little scared.
Well, you got that. Is that Beretta 92F, like, out with the safety off? Or how's that going?
Well, you know, so I climb up on the boat, you know, and I'm sitting there. And all of a sudden, you hear this guy running underneath and, you know, you can hear them in fishing boats when they're moving around. and all of a sudden it's coming open, and that quick acting hatch pops open. Man, the first time I ever put on a gun belt, I draw my weapon to shoot a guy. You know, and I mean, I'm sitting there, I'm like, you got to be kidding me. I pull my weapon, I track down this guy, I'm half trigger pulled, and luckily something hit me that I was looking for a guy that was like 6'2", 300 pounds, you know. And some guy comes running out. He's like 5'6", 100 pounds soaking wet. You know, luckily, I didn't pull the trigger on this guy. And that was my first law enforcement. You know, I was like, you got to be kidding me.
Oh, wow. I was
like, you know, and everybody else, you know, and everybody, the good thing that kind of shows that is everybody on my team, you know, as soon as that quick acting hatch happened, everybody drew their weapon, So at least I felt like I was doing the right thing. You know?
Right,
I was like,
right.
But
how do you think the poor bastard felt that had no... He's coming out there. He's got four law enforcement guys drawn down.
Yeah. So.
And I mean, time almost stands still, right? I mean, you know, in that, I'm sure that was like a half a second thing, but it feels like 10 minutes when you're trying to make that decision.
Slow-mo of you drawing your weapon out.
The hatch slowly springing open.
Trace on him. Yep. You know, your finger's on the trigger. It's halfway, you know, you got the tension pulled out of the trigger.
You're wondering why it hasn't even broke yet, right? Like, why hasn't it even fired yet? Yeah, I know.
Yeah, that could have went bad quickly, sir.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and that was the very first time I ever put on a gun belt, for the official term. I was like, you got to be kidding me.
So was the guy on board? Did you guys ever get him?
No, it wasn't on there. The Oregon State Police ended up finding him at the local bar.
There we go.
There you go.
You know.
Was searching in the wrong spot.
Yeah. And then we had, you know, just another quick LE case for us is when I first took over down in Freeport, we had a case down there of a pretty big migrant smuggling.
The wall.
You know, especially in Freeport, you know, they come through there and they drink, you know, and what they'd end up doing is they'd smuggle kids through, you know, on fishing boats and stuff like that. And one of my first couple of weeks there, we ended up having a fishing boat that was DIW about, you know, dead in the water about 4 or 5 miles offshore. And when we walked out, you know, we go out, we knew it was, you know, just an unusual boat, not for the area. It wasn't the type of boat that we had in the Gulf of Mexico, you know. It was just a strange cabin boat that just didn't look right.
Yeah.
So, you know, and since we had intel on it, because one of the fishing fleets had called it in, you know, I went out on the 45 with it. You know, I didn't dress up in law enforcement, but being the commanding officer, you know, being brand new, I went out there to see what's going on. And you know
this is legit. If a fellow fisherman called the guy in, that's probably the time the CO needs to go with you, because this is legit. Like, something's seriously wrong right now. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and I take my gunner's mates out there, you know, and Freeport, we have a couple gunner's mates, so you know they're pumped as all could be. You know, they're like kids in a candy store wiping down their guns every 30 seconds so they finally get to do something.
Thank God they didn't have a deck gun.
Right. How to put them on leashes.
You know, and so we come out there and this boat's just floating. You can't see anybody on board. It's that typical law enforcement training story, you know. You know somebody's on it. You can't see nobody on it. What are you going to do, you know?
You were underway off of Freeport, Texas when a cabin cruiser appears.
Right. So we ended up going out there, man, and, you know, I dropped... We had 245s out there. We had one plate cover, and then I drove the other one up the stern of it, jumped my GMs off of it, and ended up being 25 kids on board, like from the ages 12 and under.
Wow.
Do you know what they were doing with the kids? I know they were smuggling them in.
They're probably trying to get them into America. And the boat broke down, and then the adults there left the boat there.
Wow, just ditched the kids offshore and took it, man.
Yep. And we don't know how long they've been floating without any, you know, adults or anything on board or any of that kind of stuff, man. So it's kind of interesting. You know, that's kind of one of those, you know, that makes you, you know, glad you do what you do. But, man, it was interesting because, you know, now we got to get ICE involved. You got to get to the FBI, everybody involved. You know, what to do with this boat. You can't bring it to shore right away, you know, and all that. So it's definitely interesting to see. And, I'd never been in any part of the Coast Guard where we'd done smuggling or law enforcement.
Right.
That type, I'd always been recreational boardings, fishing boats, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, so getting into that kind of stuff made it a little bit more interesting, but, you know, still wasn't my fave.
But that question wasn't on your OIC board either, was it?
No.
You come across a boat with 25 deserted kids. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
Who all have questionable status.
Yeah.
Man, unreal. So, everybody okay? Case played out well, I'm assuming? Like, how did you guys...
Yeah, we turned it over. We turned it over to the FBI, and they took it from there, you know, just, you know, and we kind of washed our hands of it.
Yeah.
You know, just, and, you know, it's typical things we do when you do interagency stuff. A lot of times you hand it over to somebody else, and then...
Yeah, never know,
you know
what
unless
happens.
Unless you double check on it, you know, and all that, you see what goes on, but we just kind of let it go from there.
Right. Yeah, I can imagine your face when that happened. Like, wait a minute, what are we dealing with? What did you find inside?
Yeah, I can hear this. I can hear the gun event. Skipper, there's 25 kids here.
What's all right, that, fellas, you put your guns away and get some blankets out, right? Blankets and life jackets. Yep. Wow.
But, you know, yeah, it's one of those things, too. And, you know, it's funny because, you know, how many times have you been on an intel call, you know, where we've gotten intel and you go out there and it's nothing, you know?
Right.
You know, so we're getting it from sectors or groups or, you know, somebody else. But it is that fact when you get a call from a fishing, you know, somebody from a fishing fleet and, you know, they're willing to report it, you're like, okay, this has got to be something.
Yeah. It's pretty telling that you jumped on the boat. You know what I mean? I mean, that right there kind of tells, hey, the number one guy at the station felt like everybody needs a little oversight.
Yeah.
That's leadership in action, listeners. That's leadership in action. Lead from the front. Don't sit in the rear. Get out there and make something happen. I like it. What a lesson.
Yes.
Hey, Bob, you're awesome, man. We so much appreciate you coming on today. Awesome stories. We'd love to have you back on sometime.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to do this for us. It really means a lot. I enjoyed meeting you. I enjoyed listening to your story. Hopefully you can come back on and give us another one.
Yeah, man, anytime, guys. It's awesome that you guys are doing this. It's good to – the stories I've heard before me, man, they're all pretty good too. So I'm glad you guys are out doing this to the community.
Sounds like you're just buttering up Tim Woody.
Old Tim Woody.
Hey, Bob, thanks again, man. Very much appreciated. Have a great weekend.
And take care, man.
Yeah, you guys too. Bye.
Before we end this, we want to give a plug for some people and organizations that we believe in.
The Coast Guard Foundation supports the brave men and women of the Coast Guard when they need it the most, providing everything from financial aid to families in crisis to scholarships and playground equipment. As a nonprofit 501c3 charity, they count on our donations to deliver this support. Visit CoastGuardFoundation.org. That's CoastGuardFoundation.org to read about their programs and donate what you can to support those who guard our nation's coasts.
Another one to check out is the Always Ready Collective, which delivers art by and for some daring fighters of the sea. Head over to Etsy, Facebook, or Instagram and search Always Ready Collective to check out their Coast Guard and Maritime-focused tattoo flash, pinups, and propaganda. You won't be disappointed. Anyone who gets one of their designs inked on their body will get featured on their feed and can be sent a care package on the house. Find a design you like, some blank canvas, and get it done.
Thanks for taking the time to listen.
If you like what this podcast is about and what we delivered, look us up on social media and at theyhadtogooout.com.
Subscribe, like, comment, share, and review so we can keep this momentum up and do bigger things going forward.
Be sure to look for our next episode.
Until then, fair winds and following seas.